And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now, whenever that happens to be. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which really is what we all want. But that is not what all of us are getting in what is a very dark time for our environment. Because our environment, or life support system, as the phrase implies, supports our lives. Over the decades and centuries, we've been slowly figuring out that extremely polluted air, water, and soil are not in the best interests of any of us. And having realized that, protections have been put in place in this country by both Republicans, Democrats, and others in order to assure that we don't end up with the worst case scenario that would be, for example, rivers that are so polluted they spontaneously ignite, or air that's so polluted that you can't even see the sun on a sunny day. And anybody who's been to Beijing in China or other cities in China in recent decades knows that that is a reality in certain parts of the world to this day. And to some degree, the politicians, with the prompting of scientists and health advocates, have been successful over the course of the century in slowly but surely implementing important laws, such as the National Environmental Policy Act of 1970. That was the first major environmental law in the United States, often called the Magna Carta of federal environmental laws. It requires federal agencies to assess the environmental effects of proposed major federal actions prior to making decisions. So they actually realized way back in 1970 that our environment was so important that they began to codify that realization into law. And there was also the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, also from the 1970s, that do, as their name implies, protect our air and water. There were others, but in 2009 came the EPA's endangerment finding, which now underpins nearly all federal climate regulations by affirming that greenhouse gas pollution threatens public health and welfare. It's the legal basis for regulating greenhouse gas emissions under the Clean Air Act. So in 2009, they got it. They understood the threat. At that time, Republicans, Democrats were kind of more so all getting on the same page, understanding that climate and all of this pollution that we were putting into our air was not doing anybody any good and was very, very dangerous moving forward. But that kumbaya moment seemed to end in 2010, when the Supreme Court made its ruling in Citizens United. And in the words of Common Cause, it completely changed the landscape of campaigning and elections. That ruling allowed corporations and outside groups to spend unlimited amounts of money on electoral campaigns. The decision altered our mechanisms of accountability, making an already out-of-balance system worse. Politicians had become beholden to their biggest donors, rather than pursuing the policies demanded by the people. The shift of political power away from everyday Americans and into the hands of wealthy special interests is painfully visible when it comes to climate change policy. Many politicians' refusal to take action on climate change can be traced back to the growing political influence of the fossil fuel industry. But before 2009, these environmental and climate-focused laws were passed and were and are a very big deal for all of us who breathe. But as most of you likely know, in the last 10 months, environmental protections on all fronts are under attack by the current administration in a way that we have never seen before in our lifetimes. One of the manifestations of that is seen in the Trump administration's canceling of the National Climate Assessment, and the firing of about 400 scientists who were working on putting out what is a congressionally mandated report that was supposed to come out in 2027. Here's a clip from NPR on this canceling of the National Climate Assessment.
The Trump administration has dismissed hundreds of scientists working on the National Climate Assessment. It's the most influential source of information about how climate change affects the U.S. Rebecca Hersher from NPR's Climate Desk has more.
The National Climate Assessment authors are all volunteers. Scientists, economists, sociologists, tribal leaders, business leaders, people with all different kinds of expertise who spend years writing a massive report. Melissa Kenny of the University of Minnesota is one of those authors.
It is one of the most rigorous scientific products produced in the world.
Kenny has helped write two previous editions, and she was supposed to lead one of the chapters of the next edition, due in 2027, as mandated by Congress, until she and the rest of the 400 or so authors got an email from the Trump administration this week, dismissing her from her role. The paid staff who help coordinate the author's work were already let go earlier this month, which means work on the climate assessment has ground to a halt. Dave White is a researcher at Arizona State University and has worked on two previous editions of the report.
I think the reason that Americans should be upset and should be concerned about this decision is because it is more than just a report.
For one thing, it's written in plain language, so anyone can use it. And a lot of people rely on it, says White, from farmers and ranchers to judges and teachers, and a lot of local governments.
For example, city water utilities, as they prepare to address the impacts of sustained drought and climate impacts on water supplies. It informs elementary schools as they help to develop heat mitigation plans to reduce the risks of extreme heat on children.
And the assessment has chapters about each region in the country, because climate change means different things depending on where you live, says Rachel Cletus of the Union of Concerned Scientists.
It's important to understand what and who is at risk, not just in a general sense, but in a very localized sense, what's happening around the country. Without that information, you know, we'd be flying blind.
Cletus was working on a section about the coastline, in particular, how to adapt to sea level rise. Sea levels are generally going up, but how much they're rising depends on where you live. It could be inches, could be feet. The National Climate Assessment allows anyone to zoom in and see what's happening in their town. And the new edition is supposed to have the most up-to-date information. But for now, work has halted. The White House did not respond to questions about the future of the National Climate Assessment. Dave White says suspending work on the report is dangerous and
will put Americans' lives at risk, the economy at risk, reduce our ability to respond to climate change, and reduce our competitiveness in the global economy.
Climate change kills thousands of Americans each year and will present new economic challenges and opportunities for businesses in the U.S. That's according to the last National Climate Assessment. Rebecca Hersher, NPR News.
So by stopping the work of all of these scientists on this report, the Trump administration is saying, we simply don't want to know what the latest research is on the impacts of climate change on our society, because we simply don't care. Now, you could take issue with that and say, well, they don't think it's real. Well, how do you dismiss the work of thousands of scientists over the course of decades in favor of the opinion of one man who has very little, or I should say, even worse than no knowledge about this issue, because the statements he makes about this issue are not based in reality, as we'll get into in a moment. Because this report was congressionally mandated up until now, and it still is, it was released during Trump's first presidency, despite his protests. And we have quoted that national climate assessment during his presidency repeatedly on this show. And the impacts that they talked about were in direct contrast to what he was saying about climate change. So the government and multiple hundreds of scientists were putting out one message, and he was putting out a different message. Who do we trust? Well, as an environmental advocate, and again, someone who breathes, this is very disturbing. But those who would rightly be the most disturbed about this lying about the environment are younger people, since unfortunately, the younger you are, the more you will be paying the price for the actions of an out-of-touch administration. And that's an understatement to call them out of touch, because they've made it very clear that safeguarding our life support system is absolutely secondary to short-term profits and power. Polluting fossil fuel companies, and this is not conjecture, have donated hundreds of millions of dollars to get Donald Trump elected, and in exchange for their backing, the industry has received favorable policies, deregulation, and even key appointments. They're working hand in hand with the EPA to do what helps them, despite it hurting us. And the EPA used to be focused on protecting our health and the environment. That's why it was created. Instead, we have an anti-environment organization run by people who are advocates of fossil fuels and other polluting industries. It's someplace that one would never imagine that we would go to or could go to in a civilized society. Now, we'll devote a whole show soon to cataloging all of these attacks on everything from our air, public lands, oceans, and more. But for this show, we'll focus a bit more on climate change and energy. On that note, in recent decades, we had still been making some progress on acting as if the stability of our climate mattered, despite a great deal of misinformation and self-interest and dark money playing a role in politicians not doing the right thing. One of those successes was called, as I mentioned earlier, the EPA's 2009 endangerments finding. According to the Natural Resources Defense Council, in 2009, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued the science-based finding that the buildup of heat-trapping greenhouse gases in the atmosphere endanger public health and welfare. This endangerment finding reflects the overwhelming scientific evidence on the causes and impact of climate change. It was made after a thorough rulemaking process, considering thousands of public comments, and was upheld by the federal courts. In the years since 2009, the scientific basis for the endangerment finding has only gotten stronger. This finding requires the EPA to take action under the Clean Air Act to curb emissions of carbon dioxide, methane, and four more heat-trapping air pollutants from vehicles, power plants, and other industries. However, the EPA, now embracing President Trump's climate denial, is proposing to revoke the endangerment finding and to repeal standards for motor vehicles and power plants. This reversal blatantly ignores scientific and legal consensus. And that was, again, from the NRDC. And this is from the Union of Concerned Scientists. It's what they had to say about the members of Trump's less-than-credible panel of climate contrarians who were put in a position to challenge some bedrock environmental policy. I quote, "To challenge the very solid science of the endangerment finding, the EPA's Lee Zeldin relied not on the EPA's own work, but on a draft report from a climate working group made up of five climate contrarians handpicked by Energy Secretary Chris Wright. The U.S. Department of Energy and the EPA impaneled the group to meet in secret and rush out a draft report with no external peer review or public comment, and without meeting any scientific integrity and transparency rules before it was used to prop up the destructive and flimsy EPA proposal." And regarding the five climate contrarian authors who made up what they called the Climate Working Group, the UCS stated, "Each of these authors has a record of disputed or selective analysis that deny or downplay the severity of the climate crisis, and each has ties to fossil fuel-funded institutions or front groups that benefit from such narratives. The Trump administration's choice to elevate these five voices is not a neutral decision. It reflects a political choice to prioritize contrarianism, embraced by a tiny minority of scientific voices, over credible, peer-reviewed research that represents the overwhelming scientific consensus. The problem isn't just who funds or amplifies these contrarian voices. Their science itself is bad, built on errors, cherry-picked data, and arguments that have been repeatedly rejected by the broader scientific community. When flawed science and fossil fuel influence reinforce each other, the result is a dangerous distortion of public understanding and obstruction of science-based policymaking. End quote. From the Union of Concerned Scientists. Not exactly a blue ribbon panel. Enough said. You've been listening to Bob DiBenedetto on WUSB 90.1 FM on the Healthy Planet radio program. And we're discussing some of the trouble that our current government has in speaking the truth about climate change and the environment. And we're looking to create solutions by becoming informed. So tune in, keep your ear here, and become part of the solution. I'll mention something now that is outside the scope of environmental policy, but which obviously impacts the environment and every other part of our country. And that is, the current president of the United States is, and I don't say this lightly, either way out of touch with reality, or badly misinformed by his advisors, or is intent on intentionally misleading the American public. None of these motivations or reasons for his behavior are good news. And I don't say this because he's just a bit insensitive or opinionated when he speaks about the environment. He actually creates entirely fictitious narratives about clean energy, air, climate, and other environmental issues. In a recent show, I played an excerpt with a bunch of statements from his executive order signing event on coal. And I pointed out one by one that the statements that he was making were not just slightly bending the truth, but entirely fabricating right out of the air with no basis in fact, the way things are, and even recent historical events. I'm not going to go through the whole thing again, but I'll just give you one instance. Trump stated that in Germany, after he claims their clean energy plans failed, that they were going full in on coal power and that they were opening coal plants all over Germany. That's a direct quote, by the way, that the Germans were opening coal plants all over Germany and that they were going full in on coal power. Okay, maybe Germany was doing that, right? And if they were, it would be entirely reasonable for him to point to that as something that states that, as something that proves the fact that clean energy doesn't work and that going back to coal is real. He calls coal real energy that gives you real power, which makes no sense, of course. The reality, however, is, according to Germany's economy ministry, that 18 coal-fired power plants were shut down in 2024. 18 plants were shut down. And a spokesperson for the ministry said, and I quote, "No new coal-fired power plants will be built." The spokesperson noted the country plans to phase out coal-fired power generation by 2038 at the latest. So Trump said that they were opening coal plants all over Germany, when the truth is that they were closing them quite rapidly, an intent on never building a new coal plant. How do you reconcile that? Are his advisors, the people who are giving this information, are they lying to him that badly? To the point that he'll go out and make statements that are factually and verifiably incorrect by all measures. So do you see how this isn't a misinterpretation of the facts? But again, either entirely delusional, the results of dishonest advisors, or maliciously intentionally misleading. I can't say for sure, of course, what's actually happening. I could give you my opinion, but I will say that it's dangerous to say the least, since coal power emissions are deadly. And since in the US, we lose hundreds of thousands of people each year to air pollution from all sources. Now, you can lie about some details about an economy, whether giving money to the rich is going to make the economy better, when even though economists have pretty much said that trickle-down economics doesn't work. You can lie about whether a house is red or white, but when the leader of the most powerful country in the globe lies about something that is so dangerous, it should really give us all pause. It might sound like I'm talking about partisan issues here, but it's actually not partisan at all to point out that blatant misstatements by leaders are not okay. It's very patriotic to point out when we are being sold a bill of goods on something that is potentially so dangerous. Unfortunately, the lies didn't stop with coal. President Trump's recent address to the UN was both embarrassing and jaw-dropping. But please, don't take my word for that. I'm going to play you some excerpts that illustrate what is apparently a long-running vendetta against clean energy. Here it is. This is President Trump speaking.
You know, it used to be global cooling. If you look back years ago in the 1920s and the 1930s, they said global cooling will kill the world. We have to do something. Then they said global warming will kill the world. But then it started getting cooler, so now they could just call it climate change, because that way they can't miss. It's climate change. Because if it goes higher or lower, whatever the hell happens, there's climate change. It's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion. Climate change, no matter what happens, you're involved in that. No more global warming, no more global cooling. All of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people that have cost their country's fortunes and given those same countries no chance for success.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. First, contrary to what Donald Trump said, there was never a broad consensus from scientists that the Earth was cooling the way there is now that the planet is warming. The truth is that some media outlets, starting with Newsweek in 1975, published articles speaking about a possible cooling trend that it turns out was based upon localized events, not the whole Earth cooling. Peter Gwynne, the author of that original Newsweek article, said that that was a one-page article on page 64. And he said the following about that article. He says, "When I wrote that article, I did not see it as a blockbuster. It was just an intriguing piece about what a certain group in a certain niche of climatology was thinking," end quote. But when misinformation machines are looking to fabricate narratives that support their positions, they play loose with the truth and grab onto any tidbit that they can bend to make what they're saying seem a bit more credible. They portray it as a front page story, and they make you believe that the belief in global cooling was representative of the scientific consensus at the time. But that is simply not true. In fact, Thomas Peterson and colleagues, in a 2008 paper titled "The Myth of the 1970s Global Cooling Scientific Consensus," had a look at what was actually going on in the 1970s. They obtained copies of the peer-reviewed papers on climate, archived in the collections of Nature, JSTOR, and the American Meteorological Society, that were published between 1965 and 1979. They examined and rated those peer-reviewed papers. The result of that in-depth study showed that despite the media claims and Trump's statements, just 10% of papers at the time predicted a cooling trend. On the other hand, 62% predicted global warming, and 28% made no comment either way. Research from 1965 to 1979 showed far more papers predicting warming than cooling. So again, there was no scientific consensus in the 1970s that global cooling was the real threat versus global warming. And it's also worth mentioning that Trump stated that the scientists in the 1920s and 1930s were saying that global cooling was the main issue. So not only did he state a tired old inaccurate myth, but he attributed that myth to a period some 50 years earlier than when the Newsweek article was written. Now keep in mind that he made these statements to the UN General Assembly. While his listeners and his believers might have been thinking he was telling the truth, he was speaking to an informed audience. I can't even imagine what they were thinking, hearing him repeat this old, debunked information. Additionally, he stated that it used to be called global warming, ends global cooling, but now they call it climate change because they realize that the Earth isn't warming. That statement is entirely untrue, is entirely fabricated. It is still definitively, without a doubt, being called global warming, in addition to being called climate change. And the Earth is definitively warming. We need look no further than the data put out by NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies that the hottest 10 years on record have all taken place in the last 10 years, and the hottest 20 years on record have all taken place in the last 20 years. Simple. The Earth is not cooling, and yes, it's still called global warming. You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM. And we're talking about some of the ways that the current administration has a very difficult time telling the truth about what's really going on with the environment and climate change. And we're not just saying that in an abstract way, but we're pointing out specific examples of the president making statements that have nothing to do with the reality that exists. So let's hear what else Donald Trump had to say in his address to the United Nations. Here he's talking about Europe.
They must take control strongly and immediately of the unmitigated immigration disaster and the fake energy catastrophe before it's too late. The carbon footprint is a hoax made up by people with evil intentions, and they're heading down a path of total destruction. You know, the carbon footprint was a big, big thing a few years ago. I remember hearing about the carbon footprint, and then President Obama would get into Air Force One, a massive Boeing 747, and not a new one, an old one with old engines that spew everything into the atmosphere. He'd talk about the carbon footprint, we must do so. Then he'd get in and he'd fly from Washington to Hawaii to play a round of golf. And then he'd get back onto that big, beautiful plane and he'd fly back and he'd talk about again global warming and the carbon footprint. It's a con job.
All right, let's take a look at these statements. He says that the carbon footprint is a scam. Not real. He remembers them talking about it. He remembers Obama talking about it. Here's his evidence about why the carbon footprint is a scam. First of all, the carbon footprint is merely a way of measuring how much carbon and climate change gases are put into the atmosphere based upon different life activities. We've talked about the carbon footprint extensively on this show, and we've pointed out that some of the things that really impact your carbon footprints, the amounts that you put into the atmosphere, are such things as taking flights, okay, taking long flights, driving your car, the heat in your home, and especially the thing that impacts it pretty much more than anything else is eating higher on the food chain, eating a lot of meat and dairy products and animal products. So we've talked about this. It's a very real thing and a very important way of measuring our impact on the planet. But his way of debunking this is by saying that President Obama used to talk about the carbon footprint, and then he would get on his jet, go play a round of golf in Hawaii, and then come back home on that big polluting jet. That's his way of debunking the carbon footprint. The truth of the situation is that Hawaii was President Obama's home state. And his trips to Hawaii were well documented, but they were annual traditions. He would go to see his family. He would typically spend Christmas and New Year's vacations in Hawaii, and he would play golf. Contrast this with President Trump, who travels incessantly to Mar-a-Lago to play golf and to be at his country club. It just boggles the mind that this would be his way of debunking a very important measure that is still used to this day. It didn't used to be the carbon footprint. It still is.
At extreme cost and expense, Europe reduced its own carbon footprint by 37%. Think of that. Congratulations, Europe. Great job. You cost yourself a lot of jobs, a lot of factories closed, but you reduced the carbon footprint by 37%. However, for all of that sacrifice and much more, it's been totally wiped out and then some by a global increase of 54%, much of it coming from China and other countries that are thriving around China, which now produces more CO2 than all the other developed nations in the world. So all of these countries are working so hard on the carbon footprint, which is nonsense, by the way. It's nonsense.
Okay. Here, Donald Trump actually got a statistic correct, so he does have access to the information. He said that Europe has indeed cut their greenhouse gas emissions by 37% between 1990 and 2023. Additionally, I'll add, the European Union greenhouse gas emissions fell by 8.3% in 2023 alone. Now, that's quite an achievement, in no small part due to their strong transition to renewable energy sources, particularly wind and solar, as well as their reduction in coal use. But here's what he got entirely wrong. He says that doing so cost them a lot of jobs, closed a lot of factories, and hurt their economy. The truth is that gross domestic product in Europe increased by close to 70% during that same period that they reduced their emissions by 37%. So there is no tie between reducing your toxic emissions and the growth of your economy. The grain of truth in Trump's statement was that there was and is a great transition in the European workforce, from jobs in toxic energy like coal and oil to green energy jobs. Any transition like that is going to be tough on those in the old, dated jobs. And it's important to take care of those workers put out of work and help them with their transition. And there are efforts being made to do so. The big picture, however, is that more jobs were created in green energy than were lost from the closing of those dirty energy sources. I'll also point out that Europe continues to push their move toward clean energy. They've already been hit hard by the impacts of climate change, from increased devastating wildfires to extreme heat to more extreme storms and other weather events. This is a very different picture than Donald Trump painted to the UN. Europe is motivated by what they've been experiencing, and they are doing a pretty damn good job transitioning toward clean energy. Let's hear a bit more about what Donald Trump said. He's still talking about Europe's reduction in emissions of 37%.
37%. However, for all of that sacrifice and much more, it's been totally wiped out and then some by a global increase of 54%. Much of it coming from China and other countries that are thriving around China, which now produces more CO2 than all the other developed nations in the world. So all of these countries are working so hard on the carbon footprint, which is nonsense, by the way. It's nonsense.
Here again, he starts with a morsel of truth, and that is that China does indeed create more greenhouse gas emissions than the rest of the developed nations combined. And that reminds me of a parable that goes like this. A group of people were sitting in a boat. One person pulled out a hands drill and proceeded to drill a hole beneath their seat. The fellow passengers screamed at the incredulous sight and asked, "What do you think you're doing?" The hole driller dismissed the question and responded, "What do you care? Am I not drilling under my seat?" They replied, "Because you are sinking the boat with us in it." The point of that story is that, yes, China is putting out a lot of emissions. China is drilling a hole in their side of the boat. But does that mean that we should start drilling on our side because they're doing it on their side? It makes no sense whatsoever. We're collectively paying the price. A couple of other things to consider is that China has a huge population, but still, they're putting out quite a bit of greenhouse gas emissions. Ultimately important to notice is that the greenhouse gas emissions put out by Chinese people per capita, that is, the greenhouse gas emissions released per person in China, are a fraction of the greenhouse gases put out per person in the United States. So we, per person, are putting out a lot more greenhouse gas emissions. Additionally, China is in a period of rapid growth. If you look at the cumulative emissions that the United States and other developed nations have put out during the time when they were developing. It is a lot greater than China's emissions right now. That doesn't excuse China for what they're doing, and it doesn't make it good, and it doesn't make it beneficial. But it's an explanation about how portraying them as being the ones who are causing all the problems is partially true, but he's stating that as if to denigrate the efforts of countries that are cutting their climate change gases. And that makes no sense. Here's another piece from his speech to the UN.
You know, it's interesting. In the United States, we have still radicalized environmentalists, and they want the factories to stop. Everything should stop. No more cows. We don't want cows anymore. I guess they want to kill all the cows. They want to do things that are just unbelievable. And you have it too.
Now, here's an interesting piece because he's talking specifically about me here. And while I'll accept the label as an environmentalist, it once again boggles the mind to think that those people talking about preserving life, speaking on behalf of life and health, are the ones who are being portrayed as radical, as opposed to those people who are willing to burn everything despite the enormous toll on our environment and human health. As I stated before, many times on this show, the estimates of the number of people killed by air pollution in the world is from 8 to 10 million people per year. Wanting to stop that is not radical. Additionally, more than anyone I know, I've been speaking about the enormous damage that the consumption and production of livestock on our planet does, not only to the environment, not only to climate change, not only to the rainforest, not only to world hunger using most of the grains grown on the planet to feed to animals, not people, and in the process losing more than 90% of the nutrition that we're feeding to the cows versus what we would get if we fed that nutrition directly to people. I've been a constant proponent of that. But at no point have I or other people who have spoken about the problems with livestock on our planet, have we ever said, kill all the cows and outlaw eating meat? Because you can't legislate ethics. You can't legislate that kind of thing. What our job is to point out the dangers to the point where people get it and they choose to reduce their consumption because they see the diseases that it causes, because they see the damage that it does to the environment and the rainforest and to the starving on this planet. And then once many of the citizens understand that, there's the hope that the governments will stop subsidizing those things that are destructive to health and the environment as well. Again, taking a seed of truth that environmentalists point out the damage that livestock does to the environment and growing that into the erroneous conclusion that we want to kill all the cows. Simply ridiculous. And again, those people in the United Nations who are listening to this know that it's ridiculous as well. It's not an accurate portrayal of what is. Let's listen to some more.
But you know, we have a border strong, and we have a shape, and that shape doesn't just go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere. And if we had the most clean air, and I think we do, we have very clean air, we have the cleanest air we've had in many, many years. But the problem is that other countries, like China, which has air that's a little bit rough, it blows. And no matter what you're doing down here, the air up here tends to get very dirty because it comes in from other countries where their air isn't so clean. And the environmentalists refuse to acknowledge that.
All right. So he says that the environmentalists refuse to acknowledge the fact that air pollution created in one country blows over and causes the entire globe to suffer. That is what environmentalists do talk about. That's what we stand for, is telling everybody that we are all in this together, is explaining that the actions of one country impact the entire globe. But here's what's so erroneous about what he's implying here. Number one, he says China, whose air is a little rough, air pollution is a little rough. Yeah, a little rough? How about 4,000 people dying per day in China because of air pollution? That's not a little rough. That's an ongoing dangerous situation and a humanitarian crisis, especially when that type of pollution is avoidable. And he says the United States has clean air. About a couple hundred thousand people dying per year of air pollution. He boasts that we have the cleanest air that we've ever had. That's because the fact that we do have cleaner air than China is the direct result of not having people like him in power and not having people who are anti-environmental like his entire administration in power for decades. He's boasting about our clean air while doing everything that he possibly can to remove the protections that have created the possibility of us having cleaner air than China. It's still dirty, it's still toxic, but it's cleaner than China. You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. And we are looking at the words and claims of Donald Trump speaking to the UN General Assembly. And as you've heard and as you will hear, unfortunately, much of what he's saying is simply fabricated and has no basis in reality. And that's not an overstatement. And here's another clip from Donald Trump's speech to the UN General Assembly.
Energy is another area where the United States is now thriving like never before. We're getting rid of the falsely named renewables. By the way, they're a joke. They don't work. They're too expensive. They're not strong enough to fire up the plants that you need to make your country great. The wind doesn't blow. Those big windmills are so pathetic and so bad, so expensive to operate. Then they have to be rebuilt all the time, and they start to rust and rot. Most expensive energy ever conceived, and it's actually energy. You're supposed to make money with energy, not lose money. You lose money, the governments have to subsidize. You can't put them out without massive subsidies. And most of them are built in China, and I give China a lot of credit. They build them, but they have very few wind farms. So why is it that they build them and they send them all over the world, but they barely use them? You know what they use? Coal. They use gas. They use almost anything, but they don't like wind. But they sure as hell like selling the windmills.
Keep in mind, this is Donald Trump speaking to the UN General Assembly recently. And he's telling them that China produces a lot of wind turbines, but they don't use many of them. They have very few wind farms. They send them all overseas. So is that true? Well, as you may have guessed, it's not only untrue, it's almost the inverse of the truth. The truth is that even though China is still adding to coal-fired power plants, it also remains way ahead in terms of clean energy growth. China added more solar and wind capacity than the rest of the world combined last year. This enabled them to reduce their fossil fuel generation by 2%. In addition, in terms of total installed wind capacity in China versus the United States, China has nearly 442,000 megawatts of total installed winds. That was in 2023. The U.S., on the other hand, has a total installed wind energy capacity of roughly 148,000 megawatts. China has almost three times the total installed wind power as the United States. Again, the President of the United States is going in front of the UN and telling them that China doesn't use wind power when they put in more wind capacity than the rest of the world combined. And the reason he makes statements like that, or is able to make statements like that when he has all the resources and staff that he could want to give him good information, is simply difficult to comprehend. And while he's making the speech, the camera sometimes pans to the countries he's speaking about. And they pans to the Chinese delegation listening to him entirely misportray the amount of wind power and the rapidity with which they are installing wind power in China. But they just looked straightforward with no expression, showing no emotion. I think in their minds, they probably like to see, and this is entirely my conjecture, they probably like to see the United States' credibility being destroyed on the world stage. They're probably following the adage that says, if your opponent is screwing up, don't say a word. Let them dig their own grave. You don't need to do anything. You don't need to be involved. That's just my interpretation, but it's very interesting to see Germany and China and other countries react or not react to the misinformation that Trump is putting out about their countries. And I'll also note that he said, we're getting rid of the falsely named renewables. He may not like renewables, but renewable energy means energy from a source that is not depleted when used, such as wind or solar power, because the wind keeps blowing and the sun keeps shining. So to claim that it's falsely named just makes no sense. Another thing to note is his dramatic portrayal of the horrible state of wind energy and the rusting wind turbines and the expense of the turbines and how it doesn't provide strong energy. It's just blatantly untrue. The electrons coming from wind energy are the same as the electrons coming from gas and coal energy. Additionally, in terms of the comments he made about the exorbitant cost of wind energy, the fact is that if he's worried about expensive sources of energy, coal energy costs more than land-based wind turbines and then solar, by a long shot. And of course, the cheapest form of energy that you'll never hear Donald Trump speak about ever is energy efficiency, since saving 1 megawatt of energy is the same as producing an additional megawatt of energy. And it costs us a lot less and puts a lot more people to work when we save energy by getting more efficient. New coal energy with carbon capture is even more expensive than new offshore wind. And new nuclear power is more expensive than all of the above. And that's without even taking into account one of the most important factors in this entire discussion. And that is that there is an enormous cost that is not in the equations that comes from burning fossil fuels. A study done at Yale in recent years stated that the global economic impact of particulate air pollution from burning fossil fuels for energy and petrochemicals is $2.9 trillion per year. And that price was calculated in the form of work absences, years of life lost, and premature deaths, according to a report by Cancer for Research on Energy and Clean Air. The cost represents 3.3% of global GDP, or about $8 billion per day. That's the price we pay for the health impacts of fossil fuels every day. This study was the first of its kind to quantify the global impacts of air pollution caused by burning fossil fuels. The analysis also included a regional breakdown of air pollution impacts. The researchers found that the most premature deaths from fossil fuel-related air pollution in 2018 were in mainland China, 1.8 million deaths per year, India, 1 million per year, and the United States, 230,000 premature deaths from fossil fuel-related air pollution in 1 year. 230,000. As a result, those three countries also face the highest annual costs from these premature deaths. And that was $900 billion in China, $600 billion in the U.S., and $150 billion in India. There are other costs of producing and buying polluting forms of energy from either U.S. sources or global sources. And that is everything that goes along with climate change. The floods and mudslides, the wildfires, the drought, the storm damage, the acidification of the ocean, the loss of infrastructure, species extinction, melting glaciers, famine, water scarcity, ecosystem loss, our way of life, the stability of our society, and the cost of climate refugees moving from one country to another, which causes political instability, sea level rise, and so much more. These are not taken into account. And in fact, you will never hear the Trump administration or the EPA ever discuss one death that comes from air pollution, one death that comes from climate change, when in fact the figures from the experts are saying that these numbers are so huge that anybody who takes a look at the cost of energy without taking these factors into account is decidedly not looking at the entire equation that's necessary to assess the situation. And on that positive and concerning note, I'm going to shift over now, and we're going to stop talking about the lies and let you hear some of the truth. This talk is being done by former Vice President Al Gore. He's created something called the Climate Reality Project that has a wide following and has created tens of thousands of climate reality leaders across the country and across the planet. And I am one of them. And every year, he does a number of talks in various locations across the globe, explaining every aspect of the health, environmental, and social impacts of climate change. Truly a marvelous talk, and you won't get to see the slides, but you'll get to hear just a few minutes of his presentation to let you hear just some of the powerful information that he puts forth on a regular basis. This is the second installment of this talk. We played another one earlier this year, and we'll continue to play segments of this until we've played it all in future shows. This is a slideshow that he's doing, but mostly it's understandable even via just listening to the audio. So if he says, look at this and look at that, just know you can't see that, but you can very much get the gist of what he's saying. So on that note, former Vice President Al Gore of the Climate Reality Project speaking at his 2025 climate address in Paris, France.
So let's look at the health dimensions of this crisis. This has been declared the biggest health threat facing humanity by the World Health Organization, the Lancet Commission, and others. How does it affect health? We won't go into all of these in detail, but I want to pick out a couple of them. First of all, air pollution. This is an underemphasized consequence of our dependence on fossil fuels. When you burn fossil fuels, everybody knows, you simultaneously produce more of the heat-trapping global warming pollution and the particulate pollution that makes people sick when they breathe it in. The same process of burning fossil fuels does both. And the air pollution, just from the burning of fossil fuels, kills more than 8.5 million people every year. And we have come to just accept that as a necessary consequence of depending on fossil fuels for 80% of our energy. It's crazy. China and India have the worst of this, Russia also, but in many areas, it's a serious issue. The air pollution can affect mental health and cognitive ability. It's also now been strongly linked to the development of dementia and cognitive decline in older people. So this air pollution is really bad for us. And according to a paper published less than 1 year ago, the particulate air pollution, mostly from the burning of fossil fuels, is the leading contributor to the global disease burden. 300,000 premature deaths across Europe each year from the pollution from fossil fuels. Let me give you an example in the EU of the contrast between a nation like Denmark and a nation like Poland. I love both of them, but the dependence of Poland on coal leads to this particulate pollution. A baby born in Warsaw today will inhale the equivalent of 1,000 cigarettes in her or his first year of life. This should be unacceptable, of course, and the Polish people are saying this is unacceptable. The people in Poland are really pushing for an end to fossil fuels. The largest coal-burning power station in Europe is in Poland. In my country, in part of Louisiana, between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, there is a stretch of the river called Cancer Alley along both sides of the Mississippi River. This is where the petrochemical industry in the United States is concentrated for the most part. I'm going to show you the pollution plumes, the particulate pollution from petrochemical production in one area, and then I'll show you the whole Cancer Alley. The areas that are colored green are the areas where 2/3 of the population is black. Okay. And this illustrates the issue of environmental justice. Here you see an ExxonMobil facility, the pollution coming from it right into the area that is predominantly black. This is a very common phenomenon. There are many reasons for it. The land in those areas may be cheaper, and so people who couldn't afford other properties moved there. But it was also, it's also a direct consequence of decisions to locate these facilities upwind from areas that don't have as much political and economic power to resist them. They will often say this is the path of least resistance. Now I'm going to show you the whole length of Cancer Alley. New Orleans in the bottom, Baton Rouge in the top. All of these plumes, and you can see again the areas that are populated mainly by black people. What happens to the people who live there? Right in the middle, this community, Reserve, Louisiana, has the highest cancer risk in the entire United States of America, 50 times higher than the national average. Again, this should be unacceptable. By the way, in that same community of Reserve, there was a lawsuit pending to try to stop the illegal pollution of that community. And just 2 weeks ago, the new administration in my country canceled that lawsuit. I have a lot to say that I'm not going to say right now, but you can imagine. In developing countries, we also see a contrast between areas like the Western Cape in South Africa. This is like the contrast between Denmark and Poland and Europe, and in the Mpumalanga province, the Zulu country, where the coal is burned much more commonly. So the impact of this air pollution from fossil fuels is almost $3 trillion per year, $8 billion every single day. Let's talk about heat stress. This actually is one of the harshest impacts, and the people most affected include the poor and the homeless, the elderly and infants, and agricultural workers and others who have jobs outdoors. They are highly vulnerable. But in many regions, this is a very serious problem. Heat-related deaths in Europe have increased almost 30% just in the last two decades. Premature births and stillbirths are increasing because of the heat.
And that'll just about do it for this evening's show. Thank you so much for listening. I know this information at this time in history is not easy to hear. And I know some of you may have the desire to disengage as a way of coping with the unfortunate reality that our current government is actually intent on pursuing its agenda of environmental destruction in favor of creating short-term profits and power for the few. I've actually been taking mini breaks from tuning into the bad news every day myself, and if that's helpful for you to maintain balance, I highly recommend it. At the same time, I encourage you to re-engage whenever possible, since it's going to take all of us to speak the truth to one another, to power, and to support those people and organizations who are really doing a good job fighting this affront to our life support system in the courts, in Congress, and elsewhere. This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. Join us again on the second Friday of each month at 6 p.m. And you can hear this show again this coming Tuesday, October 14th at 1 p.m. If you liked what you heard, you found it helpful, tell your friends. That's next Tuesday at 1 p.m. This will be rebroadcast. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org or email us to join our mailing list at info@healthyplanetusa.org. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four and multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this still incredibly beautiful planet that we all share. Good night.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.